You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint and your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse. Joe Biden is the biggest media candidate of all time. And here's what I mean by that. The other candidates who've ever run in the past, at least in recent memory, when journalism has completely lost its mind, at least they offered something themselves to the table. You could at least see why they rose. I mean, it's not difficult to see why Hillary was the Democratic nominee for president. My goodness, her husband was president for 8 years. Then she was a U.S. Senator. Then she was Secretary of State. I understand what you're screaming at the TV right now, but she sucks. I know Hillary sucks. But you can look at that and at least say, oh, I get it. I get it. She's bringing something. If nothing else, she's bringing Bill, who was an incredible politician. Maybe not the best person in the world, but an incredible politician. And then there's Barack Obama. Obviously, I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but you can see why he would rise. Dude had charisma coming out of his pores, gave a great speech. You can see why he would rise. Joe Biden, if you believe the polls, which I do not, but if you believe the polls, is currently in the lead to be president of the United States of America. And he's nothing. It is fascinating. I've been pondering this recently. He's nothing. He hasn't done anything of any significance at all. And this is, with all due respect to the state of Delaware, it's not an incredibly powerful state in the United States of America. He was a senator there for 30 years. But even then, you really never heard his name before until Barack Obama made Joe Biden his vice president. You never heard Joe Biden's name before. You know you didn't. Don't lie. So how did he get here? Barack Obama picks him to be VP because Barack Obama, in general, even though Joe Biden screwed this whole thing up, in general, you need your vice president to balance out your ticket. And Barack Obama viewed his deficiencies as being, one, he had no experience at all, especially in foreign policy, and Joe Biden had been, you know, overseas 1,000 times as a senator. And Barack Obama was black. He needed a white dude, was worried about making sure he got enough white people in there. Okay, fine. It's politics. I get it. But even then, what did he do as vice president? What did he do? Nothing. He's never done anything. And now, fast forward to this, Joe Biden's the Democratic nominee for president, and he won't even campaign. It's not only that he hasn't done anything in the past, he's doing less now than he ever has before. And you can say that's because his brain is turned into tapioca pudding. And that's probably true. But the truth is, this entire candidacy, all of it, is a media creation. It's held up by the media. And the bad parts of it are being completely protected by the media. And this scandal with his son and the payoffs in Ukraine and China. Remember, I warned you. I told you last night, I told you, this is going to get worse. It's getting worse. It's not going away. Trump's out there blasting away about it.
Because I'm not just running against Biden. We're not just running against Joe Biden. We're running against the left-wing media, and we're running against big tech. And they all said, and I've heard this, and I kept hearing about the power of big tech, the power. And they were against us, as you know, 4 years ago. But I won. I said, how could they be powerful? I won. I never did this before, and I won. How the hell are they powerful? But now they've gone totally crazy. They've done things now that they wouldn't even do, and they got caught.
They have. And yeah, they get caught. But think about this. Wrap your mind around this when it comes to Joe Biden. This scandal, which could be, it could turn out to be, and it's looking like it might be, the biggest political scandal of our lives, at least one of them. Big tech, Facebook and Twitter, they banned the sharing of the article that broke the story. Wrap your mind around that again. Remember, every part of this story so far has been verified. We have it now turned into multiple law enforcement agencies, including the Delaware State Police and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. There hasn't even been a solid denial from anybody accused in here. In fact, the longer we've gone, the more people come out and corroborate all this stuff. And big tech banned people from sharing it? And banned the New York Post who broke it? Even if you don't believe it, even if you're a card-carrying Democrat, that should frighten you. That kind of censorship should frighten you. Even Senator Johnson's out there talking about it.
This is very troubling. What astounds me is how the press continues to ignore this. You know, we issued our report, and the press just ignored it. They said, well, there's nothing illegal here. Well, it's not my job to prove illegality. My job is to do oversight, get information to inform public policy, but also to inform the public. We gave the press, we gave the public a treasure trove of information that is very troubling, that is just crying to be investigated.
They did. And that's what's amazing about this candidacy. The media just decided, no, we're not reporting it. And virtually everybody else is looking at them saying, what do you mean you're not reporting it? This is the former vice president. He is maybe 2 weeks away from being elected president of the United States. This is verified information. What do you mean you're not reporting it? Well, it's not important. You saw the whole Trump 60 Minutes debacle where he presses her on it. Why won't you report it? She said, well, we can't verify it. Trump's dumbfounded. He says, what do you mean you can't verify it? It's right here. Well, it can't be verified. Wait, what? I'll tell you more and more. I do. I feel like I'm living on a separate planet. The White House press secretary, Hogan Gidley, he nailed it.
I'm not sure why Joe Biden continues to be given cover by the mainstream media for the things he says. Listen, if Donald Trump gets a biased, unfair, ridiculous question from the media and calls them fake news, the media goes apoplectic. But Joe Biden can literally accuse a reporter of being a cocaine junkie and say that all African Americans are the same, and the media says nothing about it. It's absolutely ridiculous. I wish they gave us the same level of cover and protection. There's one thing we know about the media, it's not just that they're liberal, it's that they protect their own. And make no mistake, Joe Biden is one of them. He is pushing the most radical socialist agenda we've ever seen from the Democrats in history.
He's right. He's right. This entire campaign is a media creation. It's held up by the media. It's protected by the media. Joe Biden is a shell of a human being with no accomplishments on his 8,000-year D.C. resume. And now, mired in scandal, this is, more than any other candidacy I know of, a complete media invention. And that is media power. And that's why you should be wary of these people. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We got a great show for you tonight. We'll be back. Joining me now, co-founder of the National Diversity Coalition, Bruce Lavelle. Bruce, is free press a bad idea?
No, we need press. We need to hear the truth, if we can get the truth anymore. Listen, I grew up in an era of Walter Cronkite, growing up as a little boy, like, and that's the way it is, Tuesday, November 5th, and he took his glasses off, and that was the gospel. Jesse, we gotta get that back. OMG, will the real journalism please step down? Is it door number one or door number two? So we desperately need the press. We need it, but we need authenticity. We need organic. We need the truth, Jesse.
Why don't we have it, Bruce? Do the people not want it? I mean, because in general, look, this is television. If I stop being interesting, people change the channel, and they should. Is that what people don't want? Do people not want that?
Listen,
because all I see out there now is garbage.
I think they've been drinking too much of one of my favorite movies by Jack Nicholson when he was the Marine, when he said, "You can't handle the truth." You know, I think they actually bought into it, Jesse. I don't know. It's like, I really think they drank all the Kool-Aid and didn't share with anybody in the room and add for seconds and just drank it till it was no more to drink. And they believe in this. But, you know, listen, I know I'm joking a little bit, but at the end of the day, you know, I think the American people, especially the people who are looking at the president, especially the people who have voted for the president, especially for people like me since 2015, the president's OG, been there since the beginning, you know, they understand that this is a living, breathing American revolution, Jesse. This is the pay-to-plays that's being exposed by Hunter Biden and his dad. They're not the only ones, Jesse. There are many, many, many more on both sides of the aisle that have been taking money, selling their seats for access and selling their seats for votes, selling their seats for stocks, selling their seats for everything. And the president said in 2015, Jesse, that he would expose the pay-to-play. He would not take money from special interests or lobbying. Did they not believe him, Jesse? Did they not believe? Oh, they think he was just making that up? Oh, he's just saying that. He's being like any other politician. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Jesse, look what's going on. Billions of dollars of regulations being cut. Lowest unemployment in my lifetime, Jesse. Watch this, Jesse. Watch this. And everybody out there. Lowest black unemployment in the history of the United States. Jesse, they started recording it in 1972. So I think it goes back to the 1800s. So look, at the end of the day, you can't just take the president's record away, as I always say. Stop getting caught up in all the emotions. Pay attention to the numbers. I'm a business guy here in Atlanta for 27 years. We look at balance sheets. We look at profit and losses. What do you think the president does? He takes the nation and says, "Oh my God, we're at a loss." What does he do? He makes it profitable. It's a businessman making business decisions, Jesse.
Break it down for me. I see these numbers and they're incredible. You mentioned the black unemployment, Hispanic unemployment. The numbers across the board for people who have not actually had a great run under Barack Obama, even though he championed that he was, you know, the king of them. Donald Trump has dominated. Why? What specifically did he do? Why is Hispanic unemployment so low? Why is black unemployment so low? Why are these numbers the way they are?
But Jesse, I have to hit it again, brother. My brother from another mother. He said, "I will go in and sacrifice my business, my wealth and everything around, take all the darts and everything thrown at him to serve the people of the great nation of the United States of America." And that's what he did, Jesse. And he did not get on the take. He did not take pay to play. So with that being said, Obama, Bush, and all the generations came in, and their candidacy, Jesse, watch this, was birthed on special interests, pay to play, funded their campaigns. Now, when you get in office, remember, you owe us. Not President Donald J. Trump, sir, and everyone watching. No, sir. They thought, like, well, he's just going to do that, and he'll get in there. He'll be just like everybody else. No, he didn't. He kept his promise, Jesse. That's the difference between Donald J. Trump as the president, former President Obama, former President Bush, and the list goes on. Now you have the king who sits in the Oval Office as the interrupter. We're interrupting all of this mess. All of y'all are getting somewhere. And that's what happened, Jesse. And that's why I said this is a living, breathing American revolution. We're all witnessing it right here. All the things that were stolen and taken away from these great people in this great nation, on all the backdoor lobbying deals and all the backdoor and side doors and front doors and top doors are being compromised and being exposed, Jesse. This is what this president is doing. So, hey, buckle up, hold on, because the train is going high speed all the way to November 3rd.
Bruce, I need you to explain something to me. Why is Donald Trump such a good foreign policy president? Now, I'm not one of these people who poo-poos anything he did beforehand. I thought it was great. But when he got elected, I voted for him, of course. I wasn't sure. I did not think I would get the greatest foreign policy president of my lifetime. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why he is. I have no idea why whatever he does works and it didn't happen before. Why does it work? What happened?
Because he's the boss. You saw the video the first month or two when he came in office, when that group of the leaders from across the country were walking through the hall. He's like, excuse me.
Yes.
Excuse me. Hello. And I say that because that's strength, Jesse. I'm in charge. You want to call me the leader of the free world? By golly, that's what I'll be. So they think that he was just going to come in there and do like the normal people in the past that did. No, he went in there and called it out. Paris Accord. Here we go again, Jesse. Let's look at the balance sheet. Paris Accord. Oh, how much are you guys spending on NATO? Oh, whoa, wait a minute. What are we getting for our dollar? Jesse, remember they were going to spend all this cash on hundreds of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars for this big elaborate building over in Israel? And he got on the phone and made the deal and spent, what, $100,000 and put the capital of Israel as Jerusalem. Remember that, Jesse? That's a business deal. You know, that people see that and they're like, we just had the UAE flight to Israel. I have friends all over Israel. My business I do, we're linked to Israel. The business I have in Atlanta, I have a lot of friends over there ecstatic that he says, watch this, Jesse. He goes over to Kim Jong, right? And then he breaks out an iPad. And he tells Kim Jong, he said, listen, look at your beaches. Wouldn't you want to put some condos? And Kim Jong's like, wait a minute, you're right. You know, and so it sounds so simple, but he's telling all the, even Bahrain and the UAE, he's like, look, okay, you can still hate each other, that's fine. But if you want to hate each other, let's do some business. And you can still hate each other. But you're making money, you're having economic growth, and you're opening up the trade. Common sense, Jesse. Oh my gosh, the list goes on. So these are common sense approaches. You don't go to school to learn this. You learn this in the school of hard knocks called being an astute businessman. A businessman that took the generational wealth from his dad, Fred, and Fred's dad. The same generational wealth I took from my dad that's teaching my son and my daughter and my granddad. That's essentially who we are as Americans. And that gets back on this subject about low black unemployment. I'm going to pivot on this. And the reason why President Trump's doing so well in the black community and rising, especially in black men, Jesse, especially that, is because the Platinum Plan, $500 million worth of resources to the underserved communities, Jesse, Opportunity Zones. It's nothing like you've ever seen before. The president says, hey, we're missing retail commodities in your communities. You should own the gas stations. You should own the grocery stores. You should own the retail commodities, Jesse. Think about that. When you go to other type of communities, whether it be Asia, Chinatown, Koreatown, whatever you want to live, God bless, you can live anywhere you want to live. But if you choose to live in a more heavily dense culture of your culture, you should own the grocery store. You should own the convenience store. So this message pushes out there in these underserved communities. It's a game changer, Jesse. So going back from domestic back to foreign, these are business decisions, sound business decisions. And that's what makes this president so successful.
Bruce, on the black men thing, I read something on it the other day. Someone had done some polling on it and saw that Donald Trump was killing it with black men. I mean, as far as Republicans go, as good as Republicans can do. And I was curious about it. So I call up an old Marine buddy of mine, black dude, and I asked him, I said, off the record, not going to give your name. Why? Help me understand this. And he said, amongst black men, they love counterculture people. They love somebody who's willing to, he called it the middle finger. He said they love somebody who's willing to give the middle finger to everybody, and they find that appealing in Donald Trump. Was he full of crap, or do you buy into that?
Oh, no, it's true. Newsflash, look at me. Gee, what am I? Anyway, no, I wasn't trying to be sarcastic, but Jesse, great point here. The bottom line is the president saw, back in 15, I was in his office in Trump Tower, many, many meetings. I've flown with him. I know him. He's a friend. And one of the conversations out of a 2.5-hour meeting on the 26th floor back in August of 2015 was that a little over 110 pastors were present also in that room, in his big conference room on the 26th floor. And he said, you know, the disconnect, the biggest problem in black communities is, I said earlier in the segment, is a lack of retail commodities resource. traditionally, most politicians want to come in and promise the black community jobs and all that. But Donald Trump's like, well, no, you can build your own business, which is 30.6 million businesses, small businesses, Jesse, right here in the U.S., which, by the way, me, out of that 30.6 million, represent 64% of the GDP. Now watch this, Jesse. So he basically sees that, he calls that out. But he also said there's an imbalance in our judicial system where men are in prison for 10 and 20 years for marijuana. He said this, Jesse, back in 2015. I was there. So he's talking to all these pastors. This pastor's scratching his head like, oh my gosh. You know, they couldn't really believe it, and a lot of them were still drinking that Kool-Aid, and they drunk on it, and they need to go to rehab and get off of it. Well, that's another subject. But he called this out, Jesse. And then also, I'm 56 years old. I know I don't look it. I know, don't smoke, don't drink. That's probably why. Got a great wife, 28 years. But the point of it is that he also realized my generation, Jesse, had 75-80% of a mom and dad in the household. And this day and time, there's been a shift and a disconnect. Less than half of black Americans don't have a mom and dad. It's like 20%. So there you have it right there. And what happened? Could it be part of some really bad liberal policies from, as I call it, the generational curse, Jesse? Could it have been systems that were put in place for failure? True fact, watch this on the Jesse Kelly Show for all your viewers. They have a policy where you have a black woman in a home. She has, you know, child, whatever. She gets incentivized through government subsidies. But the rule is you can't have a man in the house. What does that do for the family? What does that do, Jesse? So President Trump said, wait a minute. We gotta bring the bros back. Yeah, you do. And bring back the nuclear family. I'm a nuclear family. Great wife, great kids, great dad, great mom, great grandmother. You know, I'm six generations of death do you part in a marriage. I married my beautiful bride who has six generations of death do they part. So we have a generation of marriage and covenant and being together. This is the message that the president's pushing out there. And this is what's transcending in the black man, because once the black man is stronger in the home, the wife will follow. The black woman will follow. That's in any home. It's not like you're trying to rule someone or, sorry, your woman, you're going to be submissive. No, it's a team. It's a partnership. It's a covenant. And that's the disconnect that's created such a mass destruction in black America, Jesse. And I can go even deeper to this. The 1994 crime bill that Joe Biden wrote, Jesse, and authored, and then made comments like making very racial, harsh comments about what he was doing. Then he went over there and got Slick Willie to sign the bill called the Clinton Crime Bill, which, guess what, Jesse? It created the largest mass incarceration of black America in the nation's history. Jesse, hear me on this. And we have him as
Bruce
the nominee.
Lavelle.
This is why the answer to your question tonight is why black men are gravitating to Donald J. Trump, because black men say it like this, Jesse, because Donald Trump keeps it real. That's what they like.
Bruce Lavelle, you are the best, my man. We'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate you.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks.
We'll be back. Joining me now with the Media Action Network, Ken LaCourte. Ken, can Joe Biden, I ask this as you're somebody who's been around the block, you know politics. Let's say Joe Biden actually is elected. Is it possible to kind of get him through the job knowing his extreme physical limitations? I mean, the guy takes 4 days to prepare for a debate. He clearly can't handle the job like Trump does it, or like Obama did it, or Bush. But are there enough people around him that can kind of prop him up and get him through it?
I think so. I mean, look, you're going to have the entire press corps turn on a dime. Instead of being somebody who says the president must answer for everything he ever says, we'll basically have 10,000 press secretaries, and they're all going to be working for the mainstream press. So they will do their best to support him. Of course, you know, Kamala Harris's people will be going up to him, you know, behind his back and clapping every once in a while to see if he has a heart attack or whatnot. But look, if in West Wing we could have a president with cerebral palsy or whatever you had, they'll do their best to hide Joe.
Speaking of the media, I have this theory, and it's just a theory, but I know you're more than willing to poke holes in my amazing theories, so I'm going to throw it out there. I feel like we are in an extreme media bubble world where there's so much of it now. Everybody has a show and a network and a podcast and a this and a that. There's 8 trillion voices, more voices than there have ever been, that we have a media bubble created by Donald Trump, where he's so polarizing, love him or hate him, he's artificially holding up a bunch of people and some entire networks on his own, and they're going to fall flat on their face as soon as Donald Trump is not there to cover 24 hours a day. Am I wrong?
Well, for Pluto, I hope you're wrong. I think that, you know, certainly President Trump has made politics more, and I'll use the broad-based word, interesting, than would be otherwise. I don't think that the media division will disappear. I actually think that that's going to be just as bad as ever. I actually think that the media division created Donald Trump more than Donald Trump created the media division. But he's certainly, you know, how often did you come home and say, oh my gosh, I can't tell you what George Bush Sr. did today. He said, you know, he got a different kind of Earl Grey tea. I mean, so, you know, certainly there is this president has boosted the ratings on politics all over the place, just like a big soccer player might do the same for his team.
Is he an outlier or is he a preview of what's to come? I say he's a nice version of what the GOP will nominate in the future, but maybe I'm wrong.
You know, I think that it is. A lot of people think that, well, all this craziness is just about Trump, and I actually disagree with that. Again, he ran for president a couple times, and nobody cared. You know, he got a percent or two, or nobody took him seriously. It wasn't until the playing field got so polarized that the media decided to stop being the media and decided to stop being, you know, start being political players. And that's when America turned to somebody like this. I think it's going to take somebody like this on the Republican side again to bust through and basically be able to say, yes, I understand that 90% of the press is actively working against me, and the way that I win them isn't by trying to convince them that I'm not a racist 7 days a week. The way that I win them is by putting my fist in their face. So you're going to see, you know, the Tom Cottons are going to rise to the top. The probably the Ted Cruz's would rise to the top in a Trumpless world. Although, you know what? Somebody floated it out there not too long ago. If he loses, maybe Donald Trump will run again for president.
I know Ted Cruz. I know him well. He's a friend of mine. But Tom Cotton, I don't know well. He is a completely unknown entity for me, and I keep hearing his name pop up, especially amongst the Trump people. Tell me about Tom Cotton. Give me a little 101 on Tom Cotton.
You know, I'm not 100% sure I'd recognize him if he walked into the room. I think I would, yeah. And I had never heard of him. But then he started saying some of those things that it's like, you're not supposed to say this, but it's true. You're not supposed to say that the flood of 2 million people coming up from Mexico might have a lot of murderers and rapists and bad people in it, in addition to good people. And even though that's true, we're not supposed to say it. So when he came out and was one of the first ones saying, everybody's acting like this virus didn't come out of a Chinese virus, out of a Chinese lab, the one lab in the world where they're studying coronavirus is, you know, a mile away from some place where it's supposed to where some bat was supposed to have pooped. Come on, give me a break. He's coming out and saying, hey, if these cities keep going crazy, we might have to bring out the National Guard, something that, you know, 60-70% of Americans are like, yeah, it might be nice to have, you know, people not bashing windows as they put their BLM hands in the air. And he was treated like a pariah for literally saying normal things. So the guy or gal with the guts to speak the truth when everybody says, oh my gosh, you're a whatever, a racist, a conspiracy theorist, there's the ists are all ready to go. I think that puts them, you know, there's only a minority of politicians who are willing to do that. And no politician who speaks the normal gobbledygook can be elected against this machine. God bless our vice president. But Mike Pence, even though he did great in the debate, he comes out there and he gives the typical America's doing great and blah, 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 blah. They'll bury him. A go-along, get-along candidate cannot win anymore as a Republican, because he's just facing the headwinds. He's got to punch the press in the face. He's got to say those truths that will get him called nasty names, or her.
Do Republicans realize this? Because I don't see a lot of it, Ken. I see a whole bunch of losers who think this is the old day and they just want the Donald Trump era where everything makes me uncomfortable. I think they just want that era to be gone so they can go back to doing what they were doing.
Yeah, good news is the Republicans you described, 80% of them live in the Beltway. I think Beltway Republicans hate the president and the people who were part of that system, the people who were part of the swamp. Let's be honest. I mean, I saw that in Washington, D.C., Trump got 4% of the vote. All right. He got double or triple that in San Francisco. So think about that for a second, how much that swamp physically and metaphorically hates him. So yes, the Bill Kristols of the world who are like, oh my gosh, my think tank isn't doing as well. But yes, that's what they think. But most Republicans in a country with 330 million people are thinking a little bit more aggressively than that, and they're going to turn to in a post-Trump world, whether that's in 2 weeks or 3 years on the campaign trail, they're going to be turning to somebody with I think still with a more muscular way and approach to politics.
Ken, how can we possibly move forward as a country when, as you just pointed out, okay, 96% of D.C. voted Democrat in the last election? That's where all the federal government workers are. How can we survive like that when the entire federal government is packed full of Democrats? And have we seen for the last 4 years, we'll work to actively, because there aren't passive Democrats, we'll actively work to undermine a Republican president.
It'll be somewhat problematic, but let's look at the last 3.8 years. I mean, until they COVID crushed the country, the economy was going great. This president learned to ignore the State Department. They're, well, you should do this, you should do that. And that worked pretty well with our relationship with our European allies, where they're actually starting to pay some of their bills, with going after China in a way that would make everybody in the State Department puke, which, calling the fat kid in North Korea a fat kid and then being the first one to actually have a meeting and be able to have normalized conversations with that, to be able to wipe out some of the murdering Iranians that were murdering Americans and getting a free pass on that. I can go through foreign policy. I wish the president would do this, but I could go through foreign policy. I could go through American policy and say that despite the bureaucrats not liking him, he sure did a lot. He was able to, look at the rules he undid to make it easier for businesses and small businesses. That wasn't because of some government officials or the bureaucrats going along with it. He just did what he wanted. And there were even some Republican apple carts he upset. Republicans are kind of, oh my gosh, that guy's in uniform, he's a general, he must be a god, he must be the greatest man in the world, right? I mean, we went through enough years of watching Democrats spit on soldiers that Republicans' natural concept is every general must be a genius. Well, Trump upended some of those guys when he asked them, like, why are we still fighting this war? I've got 20-year-old kids who haven't lived in America when we weren't fighting an active war in Afghanistan. At a certain point, it was nice to have a president who said, hey, they don't even have roads in Afghanistan. Let's either win this war or get out. And it's like, okay, I was all for going after bin Laden in his hovel, but dude, that was 20 years ago. So he was even willing to go against the military machine as well. I hope on Thursday the president articulates it. I was never more disappointed than I was when at the last part of the last crazy debate where he was kicking each other and whatnot, and they were like, why should we reelect you? And he just kind of got onto a rambling, like, judges and this and that. I mean, he's got a great case to make to the American people, and he put his fist right in the face of those bureaucrats, and so we were able to survive without them on board. That's how we get through that's how we get through the next 4 years doing the same.
Ken, gosh, I should be everybody. Thank you, brother.
I should be a Republican media guy out there, given the case.
You should. You might end up making a career out of it. Ken LaCourte, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back. Joining me now, as he always does, national security analyst and guy who keeps me sane out here, Dave Riboy. Dave, Joe Biden. I don't think Joe Biden is an anti-American ideologue like Barack Obama was. Now, maybe I've been manipulated. Maybe I'm wrong. I think he's just kind of an old Democrat who's going whichever way the wind blows now. But tell me, hit me with it. Am I naive?
No, I agree with you. I think it's a mix of going where the wind is blowing by choice, because that's where his party is, and going where the wind is blowing without his choice, just because he's really too out of it and senile to know the difference. We've seen him on the campaign trail lately, and he's mouthing and parroting a lot of the same far left nonsense about structural racism and racist America as anyone on the far left. Maybe he says it with less conviction, but he says it nonetheless.
Explain to me why he's running for president. And I know people say he's been pressured and whatnot. When you're that age and when you're losing your mind, you know you're losing your mind. I mean, I've been around enough old people going through that. They know. Why isn't he relaxing? Why is he on a beach next to you in Florida somewhere, golfing every single morning, you know, nurse in the house, hanging out, bringing him his pills or whatever he needs? Why isn't he relaxing in his final days? This has to be miserable. What's the point of being president if you can't even enjoy it when you get elected?
I don't think people like you and I can relate to this, because we're not this kind of person. But there are folks who just live for this, and they live for the power. And you reach one milestone, and all it is another vista, another set of milestones, off in the distance that you have to attain. I mean, I think there are a few normal people who are in the House of Representatives, and I think that there are very few people, if any, who are normal, non-maniacs who are in the Senate. And even running for president, you have to have a certain kind of will and determination for power that is just something that not a lot of people have.
How do we get better people in government? I'll be honest, I've about completely given up on shrinking it. It's never going to shrink. It's only going to grow until the whole daggone thing pops and comes down. Is there a way to get better people? Is it possible, or does the profession itself just lend itself to these absolute morons?
Well, I mean, look at it this way. I think we can both take a look at Joe Biden and say, this guy, even at best, at absolute best, at peak performance, Joe Biden never really had a rationale for why he was in public service, as they say, right? I mean, for ideologues, it's different, because, you know, you have even someone like AOC or Bernie Sanders or someone on the other side of the aisle, folks in the Tea Party who came in and they have ideas. And I mean, Ted Cruz, nobody is mistaking Ted Cruz for someone who doesn't really care and is go along, get along. He has ideas about things. Joe Biden was never this kind of person. You know, at best, even when he had his mental faculties about him. So I think what we're dealing with is what's left really is power and graft. And man, if there's anything that we've seen in recent days, especially with the release of Hunter Biden's emails and all this stuff, we're able to piece together what Biden was able to, what Rudy Giuliani called the Biden crime family of setting up his different relatives in different foreign places that would eventually kick back money to the boss. I mean, I guess that's a rationale for being in public service, because if you can't make an honest dollar, you know, a dishonest dollar will, you know, be just as good.
Do people want a monarchy, Dave? Is that human nature to want a monarchy? I'm not entirely convinced that people want republics and democracies and things like that. I mean, even in places where they had them, I mean, like Napoleon's France and whatnot, people wanted monarchies. People, even when they leave them, want them. Lots of people want them. Is this just human nature to want a king?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. But I think in late period countries, in late period situations, we'll use that word, it becomes a lot more palatable because there's a sense in the population, and I know it's happening right now, is there's a sense that we can't wrap our arms around this. The government, as you say, is much too big. There's no, maybe a monarch, maybe, a what Michael Anton calls a Caesar could come along and simplify a lot of this stuff just through fiat, because we look at, really on both sides, we look at our government, the way it functions, and it seems that everything is broken because really we're in a situation, you and I mean, this is the same thing that, we talk about all the time, which is that we have two very distinct ways of understanding justice and ways of understanding how government should work in the United States. And we have not reached an agreement on that. I don't think we will reach an agreement on it. So people are kind of clawing for other options and other things that would maybe, save the day and get us back to a place where we feel like these things are manageable for us. So I think it's a really, it's a longing that makes sense.
What do you mean late period empire? What are you talking about?
So it's not a new concept that you have, let's say, the stages or the rise, the rise and fall of societies. They go through different periods. A lot of different people have spoken about this. From Machiavelli spoke about it, and Plato spoke about it, and even I guess most recently Strauss and Howe wrote the Fourth Turning about the four cycles of generations in American history. And it's sort of this idea that it's this idea that really the steam on which this whole thing runs is has to expire at some point when people have really tethered themselves from the old ways and the things that founded the country in the beginning. And this thing has to really start again, and it starts again in a different, with a different set of circumstances. It doesn't necessarily always mean war. It doesn't necessarily always mean the collapse of the society, but it is a restart of a kind. A restart in terms of values, in terms of how we understand ourselves. You could say that we're going through one now. I think that would be very accurate. The Marxists have been talking about late stage capitalism for the last several decades, but I think we're really in kind of late stage American empire right now, where we are the top dog, we are the global hegemon, but on one hand, we really don't want that job, and on the other hand, we don't feel like we're qualified to run it because, frankly, we're not. It's been a long time since the age of the hard guys came back from World War II and really built things. There's a sense on really everyone's part that, hey, we're a nation of website programmers and coders and BuzzFeed clickbait journalists, and there is a sense of civilizational exhaustion, and really that's what you're talking about.
But my only question is, my only challenge to you on that, I don't disagree with anything, but we're not a long way away from the World War II generation. That's 80 years. That's nothing, especially in the tides of it. We're not that far removed from that. How did we get so far removed from that? What? That's a rough 80 years. What happened?
Well, it is a long time. It's a long time because within that, you've got what? Three generations. Yeah. And we have... we know it doesn't take long for the education system to produce an entire generation of, you know, let's say crazy people, people who are maleducated. It doesn't take a long time at all. I think that's the really disappointing aspect of all this. I mean, Reagan said we're all always only one generation away from giving away our freedoms, and he was right. He was absolutely right about that. One generation.
God. Dave Rebar, you're the best, brother. Thank you very much.
Take care.
All right, we'll be back. It's a media creation. Joe Biden's entire candidacy is a media creation. It is astounding to watch. You know, it's so astounding to watch, I'm almost glad I'm here to see it. And I know I've said this before, and I know you say I'm the Oracle, even though I gave myself that nickname. I just cannot find a way where I think that man's going to be president of the United States of America. It's not believable to me. Hopefully, it doesn't happen. Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get you 10% off.